Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
1 hour already in the books. How did that happen? We haven't even gotten to some of the interesting, I won't call it scintillating, but interesting audio from Super Bowl opening night, Monday, prime time. It's become a big spectacle, a big event, though not quite as big as what we'll get next Sunday. Have you started planning your food? Those of you who are hosting parties or attending parties, we're not having a party at my house, but because I'm a nerd and I have to take notes, but we are planning a bit of a menu. Also, speaking of menu, you're not going to believe what I had to do over the weekend in the kitchen. So we'll get to a couple of stories that I need to pass along to you. But right now, we're really excited about continuing our run-up to Super Bowl, our coverage here on After Hours. Goodness, this is a tradition that we established in January of 2013. And here we go, yet another Super Bowl week. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on our Facebook page, also online at A-Law Radio. And I would love to hear from you if you're a Browns fan or if you simply would like to see Myles Garrett on your team. He's worth a lot. Let's be honest. He's worth a couple of number one picks still in the prime of his career. And that might be the base starting point for the Cleveland Browns if they decide that they are willing to let him go and understand that this is yet another, I guess, a domino, part of the fallout of their decision to pay Deshaun Watson that fully guaranteed contract a couple years ago. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Cruising through and excited for our first guest from Super Bowl week.
Hurts under center on first down. He pitches it out to Barkley. Takes off to the outside. He's at the 50. He's at the 40. He's at the 30. He's going to go. 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Saquon Barkley, 60 yards on his opening touch.
First down play. Mahomes keeps it on an RPO at the 5. Gets a lead block. He goes into the end zone near side. Touchdown! Kansas City! Patrick Mahomes, a 16-yard run. His second rushing touchdown of the game.
Calls from both the Eagles and Chiefs radio network. Mammoth moments to get to where we are now. A rematch of sorts from a Super Bowl 2 years ago. But man, a lot of buzz because of the superstars, Saquon Barkley, Patrick Mahomes, who just happened to have his own rushing touchdown in the AFC Championship. Our first guest of Super Bowl week not only played in a Super Bowl and won back in the 80s, but he's gone twice as a member of a coaching staff, including as the head coach of the Carolina Panthers for Super Bowl 50. Ron Rivera, always good to catch up with him and to hear him talk about the game of football. And to think about where he was not even a decade ago and everything that he went through as a coach to get the Panthers to the point at which they were on this biggest stage with the Broncos. I wanted to make sure I picked his brain about Super Bowl week. Coach Ron Rivera, what is it like to take your team into the fray for a Super Bowl week?
You don't realize how much of an event the Super Bowl has become. There are so many things that are pulling people in different directions, and As a coach, you've got so much to worry about, so much to be concerned with, and you've got stuff outside of football that you know is distracting distracting for your team, distracting for individual players, and distracting for yourself, that you're trying to keep them focused on what's important and not all this interesting stuff. So it really is a build-up to that game. And quite honestly, every time you get on the field, there's a big relief because the only focus now is just the game itself, football.
Especially if they hadn't been to the game before. How do you prepare them?
Well, you try to inform them as whatever could happen. You try to make sure they understand, you know, hey, you're going to be tugged, pulled in one direction, tugged in another direction. People are going to want, you know, they got their hand out. I mean, that was my third Super Bowl. And to be honest, it just gets harder and harder because it's become such a big event, not just nationally, but worldwide now.
I remember going to the game between the Falcons and the Patriots. So this goes back, obviously, a few years, but it was my first one. And what I didn't realize is how different it is inside the stadium versus what you see on TV. How much is happening during every, what we would call commercial breaks, right? But every break and play, someone's getting introduced. There's something happening on the Jumbotron. So even during the game, it's just this incredibly amped up, amplified atmosphere.
It is. It's created by the people that run it. They understand, in my opinion, what it means to keep them engaged, keep the fans engaged. So they're always trying to find something that can draw their focus and attention on the NFL. Not just necessarily the game, because like you said, every time there's a break, there's an introduction, there's somebody being posted up on the big board, there's something talked about, you know, as far as the NFL is concerned. So it is something that they understand. And they produce it that way because they know the excitement that you know, this is the most watched thing in the world every year.
We're excited to have Ron Rivera back with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. When it comes to the coaching part of it, how much do you change going into a game like this where you have a couple of weeks to play with it?
You know, that's one of the things that, you know, we try to be careful with. In the two Super Bowls I went as a coach, one as a coordinator, we try to keep things basic. We try to keep things fundamentally sound the weeks leading up to it, the 2 weeks leading up to it, so that when we got to game time, the stuff that we did work on, the stuff that we did prepare, the guys could handle a lot easier, a lot more naturally. And, you know, for us, it was just really one of those matters of breaks. I mean, we had a guy who didn't fumble all year, fumble twice in the game. I mean, right. Some things you can't plan for. And unfortunately, you know, usually it's something negative that gets you.
So during the AFC Championship, we saw Patrick Mahomes with a designed run around to the right. It was disguised perfectly. It scores a touchdown from 10 yards out. And members of the Bills defense admitted they had not seen that play on tape. So Andy Reid pulls something out that the Chiefs haven't used all year that the Bills could see. What's your reaction to that?
That's the thing that you look for when you're watching tape. You're looking for, what have we done? What could we get them on that they had not expected? And that's one of the things that, you know, Andy's a master at. If you go back and look at the last two Super Bowls they've won, they've had a play that's been very unique to them that was a scoring play. You know, when they beat Philadelphia, they had the Z receivers coming down in motion. He fakes like he's going up over the top, reverses fields, go back out the other side, and they throw him the touchdown pass. And then when they beat the 49ers, they bring the Z receiver down inside, and when the ball snapped, you see Kelce go straight at the cornerback, and all of a sudden the receiver, he reverses fields, goes back out to the flat for the game winner. So he's always looking for something that's least expected. And I promise you, going through all of his tape, all of his reports, everything, it all points to something that they have, that they will be planned to use at the right moment.
You spent the time with the Commanders, so you're familiar with at least the beginning of Nick Sirianni's career, though they didn't have Saquon Barkley.
Yes.
But their identity a
yes.
couple years ago was similar in that they wanted to run the ball control,
yes.
Longer possessions. As a defense, how do you get ready for such an incredibly effective run game?
Well, probably the biggest thing is you're going to have to make sure you have what you really feel is your best run-stopping group of players. You know, are we going to put all the heavies out at once and just say we're going to work to stop it and say you got to beat us throwing the ball? I mean, again, it's all going to be what Coach Spagnuolo decides is their best approach. Or are we going to continue to run pressures and blitzes to try and shut down the run as well? I mean, these are all things that you've got to go through and think of. You've got to go back, watch tape. I know the last time we went to a Super Bowl, I watched every game that Denver had played that year. You know, that's 18 games. So you go back and look at all of them, and you're trying to map out and say, hey, you know what? Look at how people stopped them doing this. This is something that we got to be able to emulate. So knowing Spags, he'll probably have done that, trying to find that one little thing that he believes they can hang their hat on and stop the run.
So no sleeping for coaches during Super Week is what you're saying.
Exactly. I mean, I'll tell you right now, it will be the hardest you work all year because you don't want to miss something. You don't want to sit there and say, gosh, if we would have only done this, or, you know, we didn't see that. I mean, that's one thing you don't want to say. You really don't.
Saquon Barkley is an entirely different element to this Eagles offense now. Plus, they have the tush push. So, as a guy who came from the defensive side of the ball, Coach, what's your theory on the tush push or the brotherly shove?
The interesting thing about it, really, it's about the initial surge. You win at the snap. If the offensive line can get going before the defense does, they'll win because they're going to get lower. They're going to use leverage. Now, the other thing they do very well is with the tush push is the quarterback is always going straight. The idea is as soon as you can get him to either stop or go sideways, he loses all of his momentum. That's why what happened to Buffalo. You know, if you go back and look in the AFC Championship when they did their version of the push, what happened was you saw Josh Allen end up going sideways. And that's how you defeat it as a defense is if you can win the snap of the ball, right, stonewall it, so that there is no push. Now all of a sudden the quarterback stops and goes sideways. You got a chance. You've got to anticipate the snap, jump the snap, and win at the line of scrimmage.
I have to admit, it was highly entertained by Frankie Louvu's attempt to stop the tush push on the goal line in the divisional round. I don't think I'd ever seen a player two snaps in a row go flying over the top of a line of scrimmage like that.
If you see what he was trying to do, is he was trying to skim the top of the offensive lineman so he can meet the quarterback at the right moment. And if he could time that out perfectly, you can stymie and you can win.
Moment of truth, Coach. Did you know that the NFL or that officials could award touchdowns that weren't actually scored as a penalty for the other team?
Yes, I did. And a big part of it was what happened in that college bowl game a long time ago, where I believe it was one of the players came off the bench and tackled a guy, okay, who was returning a kickoff for a touchdown. And they awarded him the so I knew that from way back. You know, the rules state very specifically that if something's being done intentionally and it's repeated, you know, it could be considered a personal foul. And if that's unsportsmanlike, they're going to go ahead and they're going to allow that touchdown to be given.
Former coach of the year, longtime NFL head coach Ron Rivera with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence, headed to New Orleans, and we'll talk about that momentarily. I saw the reports about you interviewing with the Bears, even recently with a position on the Jaguars staff. What can you share about the hiring process or this cycle?
Well, we're still going through it. I mean, we'll see how things unfold in the next few days, and, you know, maybe something will move one way or the other. But, you know, it's been interesting. You know, the opportunity to coach is something that I find interesting and intriguing. So we're just going to kind of go through it and see what happens.
I know the last time I talked to you, you mentioned that you were interested in getting back into coaching, but not so much the management and all the drama that you dealt with the last couple years. So has it been refreshing just to kind of get back in that cycle and see it with new eyes?
It really is. Managing the situation, circumstances was very difficult. It really was. People have no understanding of the degree of off-the-field, non-football chaos that I had to deal with. And that, to me, is probably the one thing that bothers me, because I ended up managing as opposed to coaching. And, you know, as a coach, I love everything about the game. The game's been great to me. It's been great to our family. And, you know, as a result, I've been able to fulfill a lot of my desires and dreams as a young person who, you know, looked at the NFL as an opportunity. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. I really do. But the last few years had been very difficult.
Well, we're rooting for you to get back into it when the time is right. But what did you think of the media side of things after a year of working on the desk, so to speak, and on games?
You know, what was very interesting for me personally was, you know, I did some stuff in studio for the NFL Network, and I enjoyed the heck out of it. That was a lot of fun. Good people there. There really are a lot of great people. But I also got the call games for Westwood One and Sports USA Radio.
Yes.
And that was fascinating. I enjoyed the heck out of that because, first of all, you know, being up in the booth and looking down on the game, it's like a 10,000-foot view. You see everything, everything that's going on. I was fortunate. I got to cover, I believe it was 5 Rams games, and watching what Coach McVay does and the way he innovates was really spectacular. It really was cool. It kind of gave me a little bit more of a sense of, you know, of why I love the game so much. Working with the statisticians and the analysts, the analytics guys from the NFL Network gave me a chance to really understand what it meant to dive into the numbers and look to use those numbers to see exactly what's going on. I saw trends. I saw how one coaching staff with a young quarterback and how they worked with him, and he had a spectacular year where another staff that didn't quite have it going, why they struggled and why there was such a difference between the two of them. When you look at certain numbers, it pointed to, you know, certain things that the Commanders were doing in a really positive fashion that really helped Jaden out. And I'll tell you, that's going to be the reason why Jaden Daniels is the rookie of the year. I mean, offensive rookie of the year, just because of the things that they did offensively.
When you get back into coaching, how do you use analytics like that? How much of a role do they play?
It either reaffirms what you believe in, or it points to what's going wrong. It's not the decision maker for you. It can't be. It's got to be part of it, though. It's got to be a tool that you use to help validate or invalidate what you're trying to do and say, you know what, we need to look at something different. Wow, you know, this is why. I'll give you an example. If you look at the things that the Commanders did, they used play-action pass spectacularly. You go back and look at it to where, you know, Jaden was so good at it, the way their receivers were open, okay? His receiver separation was above league average. I mean, that's telling you that the routes that those guys are running, the way they're running the routes, were really good, and they were giving Jaden, you know, good targets to throw the ball to.
Ron Rivera, you're headed to New Orleans in a different capacity this year, doing some media work, but also you've partnered with USAA for a long time. Why is that so important to you?
Well, the big thing is because it's the Salute to Service, and USAA has been tremendous with their support of the NFL's efforts for Salute to Service and making sure that we pay homage and show our gratitude to our military personnel. And, you know, my father was a retired military, so to me it's very important that we give back to that community of folks.
I've never been to Army Navy in person. What is that like, Coach?
Oh, it's spectacular. These are the young men and women that are serving our country, and for them to be able to come together in a very competitive atmosphere, but at the same time know that they are brothers in arms, okay? These young men and women are the elite young Americans that, you know, we hang our future on, and just knowing those folks are there, it was really neat. It was an honor to be there. It really was, and I had a great time just being around them. I mean, it was a neat thing. It was a lot of fun, and I'd do it again.
I've heard the atmosphere is legendary when you get those stadiums packed, because it's a different type of energy, right? As you point out, it's not just about football.
It isn't, Amy. Yeah, because there's so much tradition, first of all, that's involved with it. It really is. So everybody that's played for Army, even played for Navy, if they can get there, they're there to show their support. And at the same time, they're there to have a great time and kind of poke fun at each other and salute our nation. They really, truly do. And it's really neat that USAA is a big part of presenting that football game every year.
So we'll see Ron Rivera in New Orleans as part of USAA Salute to Service, which is incredible, but not done with this hiring process. So we look for good things, Coach. You've been so good to us this year. Thank you so much for a few minutes.
I appreciate it, Amy, and it's always great to hear you.
Ron Rivera, part of Westwood One's coverage of the NFL this season, but also on NFL Network. And you'll both see him as well as hear him, I'm sure, throughout the week when he's in New Orleans. Great to catch up with him. Our very first interview of Super Bowl week 2025. And still to come, a conversation with Lindsay Rhodes, formerly of NFL Network, now with Sports Illustrated and Sumer Sports. She's got a show that she's doing that's really nerdy, but she explained it so well in metrics that can help define what we're seeing, and it includes AI, which I think is fascinating. The new artificial intelligence models that can show you the best way to use your offensive pieces or how a defense lines up against a particular formation based on hours and hours of tape. It's incredible what these AI programs can do and the type of data they can compile. Imagine how this is going to change sports moving forward when this type of technology is available to coaches at the touch of a button. And so she introduces this one particular model that she's been salivating over this season. And wait until you hear her talk about it. Also, I asked her what the Browns should do about Myles Garrett, and I'm interested to hear your reaction too. So online at A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, Josh writes in, as an avid Browns fan, I'm on Garrett's side. He deserves to win, and this team has gone to crap and continually does because of the choices the owner and Andrew Berry have made. There's one Browns fan who's adamant that they give Myles Garrett the trade he's requested. Another tweet that just came in, John, I believe the Browns will trade Myles Garrett. It's the quickest way for Cleveland to expedite the rebuilding process. Oh, it's like a stake in the heart, right? Again, hit the flush it button again. You know how the airplane toilet sound when you flush them? They're obnoxiously loud. In fact, it feels like you might get sucked down the toilet if you're not careful. Ryan, you know what I'm talking about. They're so loud. There's this rush. I'm sure there's water in there somewhere, but it's a rush of vacuum air, and it really does sound like you open up a door out the bottom of the plane. I know that's not what happens, but
it does happen.
It goes into a tank.
Yeah, but like, is it because the plane's going like 300 miles an hour? Or?
Maybe. That rush of wind, that air compression, it does sound like a vacuum, though, right? It sucks what's in the toilet down into a tank. That's what this feels like for me with the Browns. Are you really going to do that again? Hit the flush button again and suck everything out and start over?
Oh,
my gosh.
It's a cycle, you know?
It's bad.
Never-ending flush.
And it's just so obnoxiously loud and jarring every time they have to go through it. Anyway, back to John's tweet. The Browns could receive a package of two number one picks, quality players, and also other high picks in a Garrett trade deal. He said Philly or Detroit, possible destinations. I mean, I guess. The other question, though, is what are those teams prepared to give up? Detroit doesn't have a high draft pick, nor does Philly, in this upcoming draft. So that's kind of the hard part. And those teams already have such incredibly talented defensive players. I'm not saying you don't have room for a Myles Garrett, only that it requires some finagling. More than likely, the teams that aren't already in the Super Bowl or already close on the cusp of winning a championship, more than likely it's those teams who have room, either A, the draft capital, or B, just the room under the salary cap to give him a contract extension. So it may not work out that they get shipped to a team that's ready-made for a Super Bowl. Well, not this year. A Super Bowl challenge in the very near future. Again, 855-212-4227. Glad to have you with us. Hope you enjoyed Ron Rivera. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
And now they go hurry up from the Browns 37. Burrow to throw. Here comes Garrett. There it is. Garrett, welcome to the 100 Club. He takes down Joe Burrow, 100 career sacks for the future Hall of Famer.
You think you're the best defensive player in the league right now?
Yes.
What? Why?
Why? You go check the tape. That's why.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
When your kindergarten teacher told you there was no such thing as a stupid question, she lied. Do you believe you're the best defensive player in the NFL? Yes. Also, I tell students and young broadcasters that I mentor, don't ask a yes-no question unless you want a yes-no answer, because you leave yourself in that space where you might get exactly what you asked for, and that's it. And so then there can be this awkward silence, super fun when you're doing interviews. Andrew Siciliano, first-year voice of the Cleveland Browns, maybe he has just 1 year to call Myles Garrett sacks, because Myles Garrett now wants out. He wants to play somewhere else for a team that's a contender, and he's made public his trade request, which did not do the team any favors. But that's how he gets it out there and has a little more leverage on his end, right? Everybody knows he wants out. So now teams can make their pitches to the Browns and shoot their shot, so to speak, But also, if the Browns don't give in to his trade request, everybody knows, right? It hurts them. It's a sign to other potential free agents. They're not going to play nice with you, right? They're not going to give you what you want. It's going to be about them and not about you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, 855-212-4227. Jeff is in Cleveland. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, Amy, good morning. I think that I've been a Cleveland Browns fan for years, going back to Brian Sipe, Bernie Kosar, the fumble, the drive, everything. I pretty much had it because I know that they're going to do the wrong thing. They always do. So what I think is, as Myles Garrett, I've seen him play in person, and he's a phenomenal athlete. He really is. But yes, I think, like you said, it's just all about what the Browns want to do. And sorry to see him go. I love the guy. He's always been good in the community. He served meals, hunger meals, around Thanksgiving time. I met him plenty of times. He's a good, humble guy. And I just wanted to see, what was your opinion about it? What do you think we should do?
Well, I don't think you want it as a Browns organization to turn into a stalemate, meaning he decides he's going to hold out. We know that generally doesn't go well for the player. And I can't imagine that Myles Garrett wants to A, forfeit the money, or B, miss a season in the prime of his career. But what it does create is angst and animosity. And it also becomes a distraction for the team, which the Browns can't really afford. It's hard enough for the Browns to win without there being these types of ancillary conversations. And right now they don't have a quarterback. So here's the thing. If they don't have a quarterback, you might as well let Myles Garrett go and see what you can get for him in return, because he is in the prime of his career and he is going to get a haul if the Browns play their cards right. Now, you indicated they don't do that, so maybe you don't have much hope of them getting what they want in return. But if they don't have a quarterback, they're going to be in this exact same situation a year from now. So they don't have to let him go. I highly doubt he will hold out the entire season, though maybe he would, but they don't have to trade him. The thing is, if they don't address the other issues, the offensive line, obviously we've talked about QB. It's not just that. It's receivers too, though Jerry Jeudy's a good one. But what else do you have? Nick Chubb, there's talk. I mean, he may not ever be the same guy, but the offense needs a lot of help, and defense could certainly need some attention. So how do you address that and turn the team into a winner in the span of an offseason? Well, you probably don't, which means you'll be a year down the road, you will have paid Myles Garrett, you will have gotten nothing for him, and you'll still be in the exact same spot. So as much as I would not want to be the general manager who trades Myles Garrett, fact is, he wants out. It's not like you're pulling a Nico Harrison here and you're trading him without warning, like they did to Luka in Dallas. Especially if they're no closer to winning, if it's going to be the exact same story in 2026, then you might as well trade him and get what you can for him while the market is hot.
I agree. Andy, one more thing before I go. Hey, you getting any leeway on your life situation?
No. I'm very interested. Yeah, me too. I'm really interested as well. No, in fact, it's been complete silence from the town. We've reached out to the inspector. We've called. We've left messages. And by we, I mean my husband. We've emailed multiple times, and he's gone radio silent. So the guy that was helping us with the town, who initially wrote the letter to the neighbor to tell him the light violated local ordinance, we've not been able to get a hold of him. So we're going to try again this week. It's been 4+ months now, and the light is still as bright as ever. And I'm sure the neighbor believes he's won. So it's been pretty frustrating. I mean, it just,
I can imagine,
every single weekend. So I don't obviously sleep at night during the week, but every single weekend, we're just blown away by how freaking bright that thing is. And we're frustrated too, because the town was seemingly going to help us out and then kind of drop the ball around around the holidays. So at this point now, we are actually going to go file a formal complaint or show up at one of the meetings ourselves, because we feel like that might be the only way to get it done.
That's good, and I wish you luck on that. And keep us informed on the radio.
Oh, okay. I'm sure people are real. Actually, I get more questions about the light and about our new dog than I do anything to do with football.
You remember me? I asked you about my dog, Billy, one time. The Black Laboratory. I called you. I was a first-time caller maybe about a month ago. And I told you I couldn't get him to do things, and, uh-huh. and he snapped at people and stuff. And you were right. I started showing more attention to him.
Oh.
And taking him down to Edgewater Park in Cleveland here.
Yeah.
And doing some things with him. Man, he loves it. He's a different dog now, thanks to you giving me that advice.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Yeah, I think with labs, they are full of energy. They need exercise. They need time to run around. We have a Belgian Malinois mix, and she is a nut inside. Well, she's a nut regardless, but if she doesn't get her couple of walks per day, she's all over. She's bouncing off the walls and having zoomies in the house. So we are in the same position where we need to give her that extra attention and get her outside.
Well, that was the great advice, and that's why I listen to your show, because you make me laugh, and your laugh kills me, man. Every time you laugh, I gotta laugh.
Oh, good, I'm glad. It's good for something.
You got a very unusual laugh.
Thank you, sir. It's good to talk to you in Cleveland.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Have a good day.
You too. 855-212-4227. We'll get back to your calls. If you want to weigh in about Myles Garrett, what should the Browns do? I kind of feel like they're stuck. If they don't make the trade, it could be another year around the sun and really no palpable improvements. If they do make the trade, of course, that's one more superstar that left Cleveland or doesn't want to be in Cleveland, and it's painful. But how do you get better if you don't have the ability, the flexibility to be able to move him? Now, I was looking at the contract numbers. His existing cap number for 2025 is nearly $20 million. So that's the existing cap number. The Browns are currently projected to be nearly $28 million over the cap. More than $40 million of that is dead money, dead cap money, meaning the player is not on your roster, but you're still paying anyway, or you're getting penalized for it. If they restructure Deshaun Watson's deal, again, they could potentially save some more because his cap charge is more than $70 million. Yet another way that stupid contract is biting you in the rear end. But as for Garrett, let's see, most of his compensation is an option bonus that's due on March 16th. If he doesn't play, refuses to play, the Browns can recover the money. I'm trying to find the cap hit, though. Oh, here we go. The cap charge for a trade before the fifth day of the new league year, March 16th, would be roughly $33 million of a dead money charge. So that's a lot when you're already carrying a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, it's 1 year. Sometimes you got to bite the bullet for these things. Look, if you're trading Myles Garrett, it's basically where you're trying to get back. The situation that I could think
everything.
Of. You're trying to. It's almost like a Khalil Mack situation when the Raiders finally moved him to Chicago. I think it was a couple of ones and maybe another pick.
Yep.
If you can get two ones for a Myles Garrett, as much as it's difficult to stomach that you get rid of your guy in the still prime of his career, this could help your rebuild accelerate really fast. Because if you can get a couple of first-round picks, plus the fact that you got the number two overall pick this year, chances are you're probably not going to be great this coming season, most likely. So you're probably looking at a situation where you could have a couple of first-round picks for next year, a couple for this year, and possibly another pick extra for the year after. You can all of a sudden turn what's really feels like a down point, a low point. You could turn that around if you play it properly and you make the proper picks. You could turn that around into a good contending team within 3 years. And you can't ask for much more than that when you're in a rebuild.
Tough.
If you're looking at year two or three where you're already going to be a contender, that's exactly where you want to be. That's what the rebuild is. It's all about a three-year process, and by year three, you're fighting for a playoff spot. You can accelerate that if you're looking at 2 to 3 first-round picks. And that's something that Myles Garrett might be able to fetch in the open market. It might be because that contract is not bad.
No,
and you might have
it's
to
not.
You might have to redo it for a team that acquires him. You might have to give him a new contract. You
but
might
he
have
might
to
be
change.
Willing. Yeah.
Yeah, and he might want that. You might want that because it may change the numbers and you could get out from under on a major cap hit in the beginning. All these things could be all involved. But if you're looking at a couple or maybe even more than two first-round picks, and I'm not saying three first-round picks, I'm saying two and possibly a third or a fourth or whatever it is, yeah, you can accelerate the process. You can find your quarterback, and you can start to move forward.
855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page. I haven't even opened yet. I've been working to make sure we have the content for Super Week. It's kind of a crazy sitch behind the scenes, if you will. Still to come, Roger Goodell, as well as some of the audio from opening night. Did you see that Cooper Manning was dressed up like a drum major? I guess that's what he is.
I think it was part of the marching band thing that they had.
What?
There was like a marching band thing that they had, and I don't know what it, I don't know if it was New Orleans
Cooper
thing.
Cooper Manning was oh yeah,
and he
well of
just
course.
Like it. So.
Yeah. So he actually interviewed Travis Kelce, which is sort of funny. He's wearing a large feather on his cap too. Mm-hmm. So
yes,
I do appreciate that none of the Mannings mind making fools of themselves. To me, that's terrific. It makes for great entertainment. Mm-hmm. Here's our latest sports update. We don't mind making fools of ourselves either. And here's not Marco Belletti, of course.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
It brings people together, people from every aspect of life, and be able to have a common goal to root for. And it shows the best part about America is people from all these different communities and then all different ethnicities are able to come together for a common goal as well. And so football is amazing.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
What do I tell you? Fairly often, we agree on nothing in this country except football and dogs. I recently amended the statement. We generally appreciate dogs and are so grateful to have them in our lives. And I know that's the case for us in our home and many of you too. I can't even count the number of people with whom I've connected over the last 12 years of doing After Hours just with stories about dogs, including Matt the Musher, who ran the Iditarod a couple years ago and actually listened to our show fairly frequently, but had never called in or interacted with me until we were doing a show about best dog breed. And now he's a frequent listener, and hopefully we'll get him back on the show again at some point soon and check in with him. I know his daughter's a musher, a budding musher, and he's working a lot with her and her teams. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Would you trade Myles Garrett if you were the Cleveland general manager? Not the owners, because we don't trust their decision-making as much. Mike is listening in San Francisco. Mike, what do you think?
Hey, Amy.
Hey.
Listen, I'll keep it quick. I'm right outside of San Francisco, as you already know.
Okay.
Pouring rain for me. And, very randomly, the Myles Garrett thing, he is a stud. Our local the radio stations were talking about straight-up trade. Nick Bosa for Garrett. Now, please, your opinion.
You mean about that straight up trade?
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
I don't think it would ever happen, but
no.
I mean, I mean, that's all I got. I'm at a loss for words, so I don't really know.
I think that this is tough because Nick Bosa is a member of that Niners defense, and he's meant so much to them. And Kyle Shanahan is relatively loyal, I think, to the guys that have played hard for him and been part of what he's done. I wouldn't say he's old, right?
But he is...
Trying to think how old he is. Hold on. I'm looking just to make sure I've got his age right. But
I should have looked it up for you.
No, it's okay. So he's certainly a guy that you can see the talent there for both. It's just,
yeah.
I feel like Nick Bosa has more injuries. I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and kind of compare.
No, you're right. I'm kind of pissed off here.
Yeah, I can understand why the Niners would want to add Myles Garrett, but I don't know that you give up a guy in Bosa. But from the Browns' perspective, Bosa is likely to cost you about the same as what a Myles Garrett. Maybe not quite. We're talking a few million dollars here or there. But he's also a superstar, and he's going to expect to get paid like a superstar. And I don't know. Actually, he's only 26. He's younger than Myles Garrett.
Yeah,
could that be true?
Yeah,
Yeah,
2 years
you know,
younger.
Two years younger.
Poor Nick. I don't want to put him on the, you know, him to go to the Browns. I mean, no offense to the Browns, but my
right.
Gosh.
Also, that's not even fair.
I know, but anyway, I mean, and then they talked about having both of them on each end on the line, and that could not happen because they're probably going to pay Purdy. But
right, money is a concern.
And then, no worries. I'm Italian. I talk too much. But,
nice, me too. Do you talk with your hands?
I do. I'm actually.
Don't while you're driving.
No. I came out to my car because I didn't want to wake the missus. So
good for you.
I'm not married, but yeah, my significant other. Anyway, I'll leave you with, we're talking about dogs.
Yes.
So I was with my mom's earlier, and she's got two Shih Tzus. They're both 2 years old. They're brothers.
Aww.
Rocky and Louie. So she got them from a breeder up north here in California in the Bay Area. And I literally got licked to death earlier going over there. They're like mini, you know, like Rocky's
like
17 pounds and Louie's like 20.
Wow.
So 20 pounds. I put a couple of San Francisco Giants beanies on their heads and I got photos of them.
You need to send us one. Send one to at A-Law Radio so we can see it.
Oh, it'll be Rocky. At A-Law Radio?
At A-Law Radio on Twix. Yes.
Hold on. A-Law Radio on Twix.
Well, on X, if you need to be formal. Yes. At A-Law Radio.
Forgive me. I'm formerly a computer geek, but I'm not really up to speed.
All right. Either way, you can do it. I believe in you. I believe that you're really smart, and I like the idea of Nick Bosa. Mike, thank you. In San Francisco, I just don't know that the Niners would do it and give up Bosa, because then it's more of a swap. But I actually was surprised to realize that Bosa's younger. All right, coming up next, we'll ask Lindsay Rowe that same question about Myles Garrett. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.